Chapter 8. Captain. Lucy lifted her head from her chest, forcing her groggy eyes open once again. The last thing she remembered was the jeep wavering between fallen trees that were obstructing the road, flashes of purple leaves visible among the branches. In the darkness, Lucy was sandwiched between two Marines in the back row. Jackson sat on her right, scanning the darkness through a pair of night vision goggles, while the lieutenant covered the left. Up front, the major scouted the foreground, while an as-yet-unnamed soldier was driving. Unlit buildings began to come into view as the jeep's lights bounced off the dark windows of abandoned homes and empty stores. The car slowed as it rounded a series of deserted intersections, populated by ineffectual traffic lights and parked cars. After more bends, the buildings began to thin out again, giving way to open road for a short time.
"Home and dry," said the major from the front, tapping his fingers twice on the window ledge.
Lucy squinted as the headlights bounced sharply off a metal entrance sign. "Welcome to Fort Leonard Wood," read the inscription upon the large rock sculpture. The vehicle passed through the raised security barrier, its booth unmanned and blacked out, and proceeded into the campus, passing large, darkened brick buildings. The driver began to toggle the main beam lever in a repeating pattern, causing the headlights to flash. As the jeep slowed almost to a crawl, Lucy saw a wire mesh fence glistening up ahead, and small faint lights further beyond that. Dazzling light suddenly bombarded the jeep from both sides. Lucy raised her hand to her face, squinting through the gaps between her fingers to try to make out her surroundings. The rattling sound of metal being dragged over concrete resonated from up ahead, and the vehicle began to move forward again. The gate they passed through was part of a tall metal fence adorned with razor wire, which extended away from them in both directions into the darkness. Soldiers immediately began resealing the gate behind them as the jeep continued. Lucy jolted as a short burst of machine gun fire sounded from behind. Spinning in her seat, she caught the marksman in the watchtower shooting out into the wilderness they'd just left. Below his tower, the gates clanged shut and the spotlights cut out. The jeep swept around 90 degrees and stopped outside the fire escape of a large brick complex. The driver crunched on the handbrake and killed the headlights, returning the surroundings to darkness. The others began to climb out of the car, so Lucy followed suit. As she did so, the fire escape door opened, allowing light to creep out from the corridor beyond. A diminutive, pale, balding officer appeared in the threshold and addressed Major Lopez.
"Welcome back, sir," said the balding officer, saluting.
"Thank you, Coleman. No injuries to report. But we picked up a civilian."
The officer paused from scribbling on his clipboard and looked up, peering over his rounded glasses and scouring the group until his eyes came to rest upon the newcomer. Lucy's feet shifted slightly as she looked from Officer Coleman to Major Lopez.
"I see," said the officer, less than warmly.
"She's a scientist. She'll be useful to us," replied the major, breezing past the smaller officer.
The rest of the troop followed Lucy, scurrying to keep up, anxious to stay close to her human ticket.
"Oh, and she killed Carmen's gang," added the major, calling back to Coleman, who nearly dropped his clipboard.
The corridor was long and uninviting, poorly lit by two inadequate emergency strip lights at each end. The cold air condensed on the colder concrete interior, forming droplets along the ceiling and walls. Lucy's breath preceded her as they marched towards the far end. Major Lopez stopped and turned to Lucy as they reached an unmarked door.
"Wait in here," he said, standing to the side in the threshold, pinning the door back with a muscular arm. "The general will want to meet you. Don't touch anything."
From the dim wedge of light spilling over from the corridor, Lucy could make out a sliver of the otherwise pitch-black office. It was unkempt. Piles of open maps and papers were spread across the desk, covered in rulers and pencils. Next to them was an ashtray stoked to the brim, which pinned several more papers down. By the looks of it, a route was being charted. Venetian blinds covered both of the far windows. Lucy tiptoed towards the nearest one and stuck her fingers between the dusty slats. Pushing them apart, she peered out, only to see nothing but her own reflection in the black glass.
"Not much of a view, I'm afraid,"
came a gravelly voice from behind her. Lucy whipped around.
"Sorry, I didn't mean to alarm you,
the stranger added. The man in the doorway looked somewhere between 50 and 90. He had the hair of a younger man, but the bags under his eyes and wrinkles across his face told a longer, more arduous story. He was immaculately dressed, and his uniform well decorated, with a series of stars adorning his epaulets.
I think we owe you a little light after that,
he said, flicking the switch on the wall and bringing on the overhead strip light.
Please,
he added, gesturing to the visitor's seat and then settling into the chair behind the desk.
Apologies for the mess. As you can see, things are a little busy here.
Lucy nodded, not sure whether it was appropriate to speak unless called upon to do so.
I'm General Whittaker. I'm in charge of this facility and the people in it. You are?
Lucy Young, she replied.
Welcome to Fort Leonard Wood, Lucy. Major Lopez tells me you killed Kerman's gang. Is this true?
I'm not a murderer. They were going to kill me, she explained. It was self-defense. They raided my house a couple of weeks ago and took all my stuff, then came back today and tried to... Her fists clenched as she relived the attempted rape, mentally shooting the men from the window all over again and driving the knife into Garrick's neck.
They were depraved, said the general, sensing her discomfort. You did the right thing in defending yourself. Although truthfully, I'd like to know how you managed to beat them, given their numbers.
The beasts, said Lucy. If they hadn't arrived when they did, well, I'd either be dead or the gang's prisoner. I managed to shoot two of the gang members at the start, but then Garrick and the guy I'm guessing is Kerman caught me. They were assaulting me in the barn when the beasts arrived and attacked the fifth gang member. I stabbed Garrick and Kerman while their attention was diverted, then shot the beasts. I stole their SUV, but you guys shot the wheels out, so here I am now in your office, which has freaking electricity, wondering what the hell you guys have been doing for the past 4 months while I was starving to death and nearly being raped on some abandoned farm. You're the army, for Christ's sake. Where were you? The general looked at her patiently. Sorry, she added. Can I get a shower, please? And I could use some food and water.
Of course, replied the general. But there's someone you need to meet first. Your experience with the creatures is something of a priority. Come with me.
He left the room, flicking the switch as he went, leaving Lucy jogging to catch up.
I'm sorry to have to be so abrupt,
continued Whittaker as he paced down the corridor ahead of her, past the off-white walls and military photographs.
But we move out in less than 48 hours.
Lucy took a double step as the general hooked left and began climbing a staircase. He was faster than she'd expected.
There's a huge mustering operation underway in D.C., he continued, exiting the staircase a floor higher and proceeding along the first corridor. Apparently, they're close to getting new satellites online. Balloons or something. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but the intel's good. Once we've got GPS back, we'll have coordinated aerial firepower at our disposal, and we'll erase those creatures off the face of the Earth.
When you say D.C., queried Lucy.
Yes, as in the capital, replied the general.
Oh, last I heard it had been compromised. The general laughed.
That's one way of putting it. Personally, I'd go with annihilated. Although technically there weren't any explosions, just several thousand people got their faces chewed off, is all. And there they were thinking they'd been lucky to survive the virus. Anyhow, the beasts died out, round there anyway, and the military's taken it back as a stronghold. So far they've managed to keep it that way. Now it's becoming a rallying point. We're due to converge there soon, along with every surviving camp in the country.
There are more camps? How many? Pressed Lucy.
I'm reckoning on a few thousand, replied Whittaker. Assuming ours is average size, that's gotta be several hundred thousand people. Not a bad-sized army. We were a training facility before all this kicked off. But when the satellites went down, we received orders that all bases across the country were to fortify themselves immediately, which we did. I moved the whole company into this central building, and we built a razor wire perimeter, plus the watchtowers. Believe it or not, this place was overcrowded when we started. Then the virus hit, and that was that. 3/4 of the company died, along with most of the town, but then the virus itself died and those creatures started to emerge. So we opened the doors to any survivors in the town. They took refuge here, and in exchange we trained them, pretty quickly, for basic combat.
As they neared the end of the corridor, the general stopped suddenly and knocked on a door. Lucy narrowly avoided walking straight into his back. A soldier with glasses opened the door and saluted Whitaker.
At ease, Captain. Lucy, this is Captain Rangecroft. He's responsible for gathering intelligence on the creature so we can figure out how to beat them. Tell him everything you've discovered. Captain, see to it that she gets some food and drink tonight. I'm afraid the shower will have to wait until morning, Lucy, but Rangecroft here will show you to your dorm. In the morning, find the lieutenant. He'll assign you a duty.
The general turned on his heel and left them, his footsteps echoing down the dark corridor. Lucy surveyed the room before her. It was much like Whitaker's, only littered with incongruous scientific instruments. Microscopes, centrifuges, petri dishes, flasks and beakers of different sizes held in small clamps. All were dotted around the otherwise regular office in a haphazard fashion. Instead of the tiled or vinyl floor of a laboratory, there was industrial-strength nylon carpet. Small, plain tables that didn't match the central desk had been pushed together against the three far walls, creating a wraparound worktop.
"Please come in,"
urged the captain. His short, unkempt brown hair was several shades lighter than Lucy's.
"I've got to ask you, where did you get this?"
He held up the tub of white powder.
"Hey, that's mine," protested Lucy, realizing they'd kept her backpack.
"How did you get it?"
pressed Rangecroft gently, his 30-something skin in better shape than the brow-beaten general's.
"I collected it," replied Lucy. "It was inside a dead beast I found, in one of the black tubes they have coiled up inside them."
He flipped through a notebook until he found the page he wanted and thrust it under her eyes.
"Like this."
The pencil sketch of a coiled black tentacle was similar to the one she'd discovered, only this one ended in two sharp peaks instead of one.
"Yeah, a lot like that," said Lucy. "I take it you've been through my notebook too, then?"
"Not yet. They only brought your stuff a moment before the general brought you."
"Should I?"
"Pass me my backpack. I'll show you."
Rangecroft reached under the desk and pulled it out, handing it over. "The one I found was similar to yours," continued Lucy, taking out her notebook and flicking to the appropriate diagrams.
"Oh my." "Yes, but look. There are some crazy differences,"
replied Rangecroft, flipping to his own drawing of a creature's chest cavity. His had a different rib structure and two large lungs instead of Lucy's smaller four. Swapping notebooks, they silently trawled through the other sketches and annotations in mutual fascination. His were more extensive than hers. He'd encountered several different types of beast. But to her surprise, his terminology was no more sophisticated. It was speculative, observational.
"Have you had a chance to analyze the white powder yet?" asked the captain, handing Lucy back her notebook.
"What?" said Lucy, perplexed.
"No, I've been living on a farm." "But you're clearly a scientist. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure the general would have had you mopping floors by now."
"I'm technically..." "Here," he interrupted, eagerly swinging her around to a microscope. A petri dish holding a tiny sample of chalky powder sat under the lens. She peered down the eyepiece. The white molecules were tubular in shape and lay at random angles to each other, unbonded.
"Here, you won't have had anything to compare it with," said Rangecroft, snatching the petri dish away and immediately inserting another, this time containing a liquid.
"Look, very different, right?"
"Gen water," said Lucy, recoiling from the lens in horror. "Was this a person?"
"No,"
said the captain.
"But I can show you a person if you..."
"No," said Lucy firmly.
"I'm good."
"Noted."
"Well, this sample's from a domestic cat," continued Rangecroft. "The remains of one, anyway. What did you just call it?"
"Gen water."
"Yeah, that's what they..." Lucy gathered her thoughts as her mind did a somersault back to the train, and the crash, and the hike along the tracks.
"That's what it's called."
"All right, then. I've been calling it X up until now, but your version's way better."
"It's not my..."
"So you know that's what its prey turns to, right?"
pressed Rangecroft.
"After they attack it."
"Of course you do. Of course you do," he muttered.
"Do you see how the Genwater molecules are all uniform?"
"Isn't that insane?"
"They came from a cat, a complex organism, less than 24 hours ago. All those different cell types reduced to a monoculture. The question is then, if gen water is the byproduct, then what's the attacking agent?"
"D4, replied Lucy. "The thing that does the attacking is called D4. It started out as a single-celled organism, then evolved crazy quickly by appropriating the DNA of any species it interacted with on Earth. The airborne virus that killed everyone was an early form of it. Now these beast things are the most advanced manifestation so far.
Wait, so you're saying the airborne pathogen has now become a mammal?
Among other things, yeah. It's advanced insanely fast. Each time D4 attacks, it turns its prey into this Genwater stuff, which is basically a big genetic soup. I guess you'd need a functioning electron microscope to see that. But the point is, Genwater is where D4 gets its next form from. It's how it keeps adapting. I think it also acts as their food source. Lucy peered down the eyepiece at the Genwater petri dish. Unlike the powder, these transparent cells were both perfectly round and conjoined. Most drifted freely, but a few had clustered together to form small rafts. She stepped back from the microscope and looked at Rangecroft. "Have you ever seen the creatures reproduce?" He shook his head, lips slightly parted. "I've only seen small ones reproduce," continued Lucy. "I saw butterflies develop, if that's the right word, from a single transparent blob of liquid. Suddenly, all these butterflies emerged, just like that," she said, snapping her fingers. "It's called an MRE, a massive respecialization event. And I think Genwater," she said, pointing to the petri dish, "might be the precursor. Massive despecialization, it would figure."
"But there needs to be a catalyst then," pondered Rangecroft. "If the Genwater is inert, something else must be triggering the respecialization."
"Right," replied Lucy, "which I guess is where D4 comes in again. Exactly how that works, though, I have no idea." She turned her attention to the rest of the makeshift laboratory. "How long have you known about the white powder?" she asked, picking up a jar containing a partially decayed dog paw.
"I only discovered it this week,"
confessed Rangecroft, eyeing the paw anxiously.
"We've not had the resources to do proper autopsies or experiments until recently, what with the losses we've sustained. It was a push getting the general to give me the time, but he's on board now that I've got things to show for it."
Lucy placed the jar down on the worktop.
"It's the only way we'll win. Have you tested it as a poison yet?"
"A poison?" "I did some experiments on the farm. The creatures seem to avoid carcasses that have white powder on them, which makes me think it could be toxic to them," she explained. Rangecroft frowned, thinking.
"What if this is a corruption of their despecialization process?" Lucy continued.
"But not inert, like the Genwater. What if it's more than just a toxic substance? Maybe it's some kind of organic agent."
"Like D4, suggested Rangecroft.
"Exactly, but a cancerous form of it." Rangecroft's hazel eyes widened.
"That would mean we could harvest it from infected creatures."
"And use it against them," completed Lucy.
"Precisely. If the powder's organic, we could potentially cultivate it. Then we'd have a reproducible weapon," gasped Rangecroft. "But to do this..."
"To do this," replied Lucy, finishing his sentence, "we'd need to capture one alive." "February 18th, estimated. This place has electricity and proper rations. There's got to be at least 200 people here. I think only around a third are professional soldiers, though. The rest are civilians like me who they've rescued and are training. Turns out Captain Rangecroft is a qualified chemist. The green paste that the cold woman, Jackson, put on my head injury yesterday is one of the captain's discoveries. He says that it's a blend of leaves and minerals, but he's not yet sure what the active ingredient is. Either way, something in the paste appears to mask the scent of blood from the beasts. Rangecroft helped me to pitch Operation Beast Capture to General Whittaker, who agreed after a lot of persuading. People and ammunition are precious resources here, and the nature of the mission is extremely risky. The general made that point at least 8 times, but in the end, we convinced him that it's worth doing. Because it is worth doing. This powder could be the beast's primary weakness, and knowing that for sure will give us the upper hand for the first time since the satellites failed. If we could synthesize the powder, the possibilities are vast. We could make it rain with the stuff, or put it into tiny particles in the air as they did to us in the beginning. There'd be no way they could escape it. The generals allowed us to put a task force together. With Major Lopez's help, we've planned a mission. It begins at nightfall. The 4 volunteers sat silently in the open-top jeep. It was nighttime, and they had precious few hours to complete the mission. The entire camp was due to move out at dawn. Lucy wore a bulletproof vest and a helmet like the other soldiers. She nervously consulted her kit over and over, routinely feeling to check the military-issue handgun was still there. Captain Rangecroft's back jostled against hers as the jeep rocked over the field, both of them facing outwards over their respective sides, scanning the dark horizon.
"Okay, squad. That's half a mile,"
crackled Whitaker's voice over the radio, and the jeep slowed to a stop. They were back on the open road just beyond the purview of the fort's rocky welcome sculpture. Grass rippled in the breeze, swaying gently on either side of the tar.
"Roger base. Over,"
replied Major Lopez from the front. Lucy peered back at the watchtower. The sniper's figure was rendered blurry green through her night vision goggles. The fact that the daylight beasts hadn't made it yet this far was reassuring on one level, but it had meant the experiment had to be conducted by night, making Lucy's task force significantly more vulnerable. The mission had three stages. First, they had to infect one of the creatures with the white powder. For this purpose, they had prepared specially coated rubber bullets. The idea was that the infected creature would be ostracized by any others with it. This would make the capture part easier, for which they would use a combination of net guns and tranquilizers. Meanwhile, the watchtowers would provide lethal force should any other beasts require neutralizing. Rangecroft had suggested that they could later feed small doses of their gen water samples mixed with sedatives to the captured creature. His aim was to see if, by keeping the beast alive for longer, they could grow more of the cancerous white powder for harvesting before the beast succumbed. For containment purposes, they were to target one of the smaller species the captain had recorded and kill any of the larger ones that approached. They knew there was a small pack of four local to the area, and fingers weren't straying far from triggers. In addition to the semi-automatic rifles, which used powder-tipped bullets, the task force all carried backup revolvers with regular ammo inside. The sniper tower was briefed to intervene should any beasts get within a 10-yard radius of the vehicle. The jeep sat still in the darkness, all of its lights off, its occupants relying solely on night vision and the tower's support for visuals as they scanned the fields for signs of movement. Nothing. Beads of sweat trickled down Lucy's forehead as they prepared to initiate the riskiest component of the mission, the luring. Unlike her previous efforts with traps and woodland bait, they didn't have days to wait. They needed a shortcut. The radio crackled back into life.
"Commencing luring phase in 3, 2, 1.
A small explosive packed with blood detonated approximately 200 yards ahead of their position.
"Phase 2 successful. Over,"
reported the major from the front.
"Prepare for..." "Oh, shit."
Lucy's eyes whipped around to the front and stared in horror as she realized what Major Lopez was seeing. Faint droplets began to shower the windshield of the jeep.
"Major, we need to back up, now," cried Rangecroft.
Lopez threw the vehicle into reverse, speeding backwards up the bumpy terrain and throwing Lucy off balance. The fall knocked her goggles askew, plunging her into night's darkness. For a millisecond, the sky flashed bright white as a sniper bullet sped past the jeep, implanting into the body of a beast just yards away with a supersonic crack, felling the creature mid-pounce. The beast disappeared immediately, swallowed up by the darkness as the jeep screamed backwards.
"Get your asses back here! Jesus Christ, there's dozens of them!" cried Whitaker's voice over the radio.
Lucy fumbled in a panic, wrestling her goggles back onto her face just in time, sliding on the lightly bloodied metal floor. Three large figures were closing in on her side. She grabbed her rifle and pointed over the side of the truck, struggling to aim steadily as the jeep bounced. She squeezed the trigger hard, sending an array of rubber bullets into the night. One of the creatures fell away, but the other two continued to advance, rapidly closing in. Lucy fired again, trying to spread her bullets between the two, but the beasts diverged, forcing her to pick a target. She took aim at the biggest one and fired again, round after round. Nothing. Suddenly, Rangecroft appeared at her side.
"Keep shooting!"
he cried as the two of them concentrated their fire on the closest beast, eventually bringing it to the ground. Lucy turned to her left. The third beast was launching into a final sprint, but another supersonic crack from the sniper brought it down in the nick of time.
"Major Lopez, sir, we need to go faster,"
shouted Rangecroft, returning to cover his own side and firing into the night.
"Everybody hold on," screamed Lopez.
Lucy grabbed the sides of the Jeep for stability. The Major slammed on the brake and brought them skidding around 180 degrees, immediately crunching the vehicle back into first gear and lurching forwards again, this time building speed.
"Jesus Christ, tell them to open the gate!"
cried Rangecroft as they sped towards the sealed camp, but his voice cut off suddenly. Lucy looked around and he was gone. A trio of sniper bullets rang out in quick succession, disappearing into the darkness where the captain had fallen.
"Stop the truck!"
cried Lucy as the radio crackled back into life at the exact same moment.
"Task Force, you're man down. Repeat, man down."
An alarm sounded from the base and the gates began to open.
"Fucking Christ,"
shouted Lopez, spinning the vehicle around once again as more sniper fire picked out targets in the darkness. He threw on the Jeep's headlights and thrust the vehicle towards Rangecroft's body, which lay strewn across the grassy roadside. Lucy pulled off her night vision goggles as she prepared to jump. Without thinking, she leapt from the Jeep as they pulled level, Jackson jumping out too. Grabbing the captain's bloodied body, they dragged him to the lip of the Jeep, heaving with all their combined strength to get him on board as sniper bullets whizzed past either side of them, colliding with unseen targets. A second Jeep roared out of the camp and onto the field, sending a barrage of rounds into the darkness as Lucy and Jackson climbed back aboard. The Major spun the Jeep around, pushing the pedal to the floor. They raced up the terrain towards the open entrance as the supporting vehicle provided covering fire, aided by additional snipers scrambled to the towers. Lucy tried to hold steady as she knelt in the back of the truck, pressing hard against the deep wound on the captain's shoulder. Blood seeped up through the long perforations in his flesh, soaking his uniform and covering Lucy's hands. Each jolt of the vehicle caused more life to spill out from his open veins as they careened onto the concrete causeway. The gates closed behind them as a line of troops covered the two returning vehicles. A cleanup team was already rushing to attend to the trailing blood while snipers continued to pick off advancing creatures.
"Keep pressing down,"
yelled Jackson as she cut the captain's uniform open, tearing it into strips. She tied them tightly around the wound, throttling his hemorrhaging blood supply. The camp medic greeted them at the fire escape as four Marines bundled Rangecroft's body onto a stretcher, rushing him inside. As they took him away, Lucy spotted a puncture mark at the top of the captain's neck, and the last of her hope vanished. She stood beside the captain's bed in the makeshift infirmary on the first floor, a heart rate monitor denoting the faint flicker of life left in him. The room was a crudely adapted office into which a hospital bed and some minimal equipment had been placed. Property of General Leonard Wood Army Community Hospital was stamped on the side of the bed trolley. Rangecroft had lost a huge amount of blood, and it wasn't something they kept a supply of on the base. Lucy had only been allowed to visit him after she'd been thoroughly decontaminated of blood traces and her uniform had been burned. The entire base had been scrambled to assist with the urgent cleanup mission. The medic had cauterized Rangecroft's wounds to stop further bleeding. It had left him alive, but horribly scarred. Gone were the handsome, youthful features. Burned flesh now covered the great lacerations across his face, neck, and torso. Staccato gunfire sounded from outside as the sniper tower continued to repel yet more beasts being drawn to the last few droplets.
"Are we just gonna leave him here?"
asked Lucy, sensing Jackson appear next to her.
"Nothing else to do,"
replied Jackson, picking dirt out from under her short nails. Lucy nodded, and they stared at the helpless man in silence.
"I need your help," said Jackson after a moment.
"Me? How?" Jackson lifted up her sleeve and revealed a small puncture mark on her forearm. Lucy gasped.
"The thing must have got me when we grabbed the captain," said Jackson. "I think it was the same one that got him. You know about this stuff. Do something."
Lucy considered, fully aware that Rangecroft's life hung by a thread because of her last untested idea.
"Hey, quit dicking around,"
snapped Jackson.
"I'm fucked or I ain't, so do whatever, but hurry up, 'cause we gotta go."
Lucy nodded. There was only one thing she could think of.
"Come with me," she replied.
She led Jackson to Rangecroft's cluttered office and retrieved her tub of white powder. What was left of it, at least, after they'd coated the bullets.
"Give me your arm," instructed Lucy.
Jackson held out her arm and rolled up the sleeve. The surrounding skin was already starting to look gray. Lucy took the powder and sprinkled it into the puncture until the small void was filled, then sealed over it with medical tape she'd taken from the infirmary.
All right, let's hope that works, said Jackson, heading for the door. We move out in an hour. Be ready.
February 20th. It's early evening and we've been on the road for almost 12 hours. We left Captain Rangecroft to die. The general refused to bring him. Too much of a risk for too little hope, is how he put it. I rubbed some white powder and grain paste into Rangecroft's wounds. I doubt it will work. Even if it did, he's lost so much blood, I don't think he stands a chance. We left him with a loaded gun, in case he wakes up. General Whitaker made me Rangecroft's replacement, which is insane, given that I've never served in my life and I'm neither a qualified scientist nor a medic. I just hope I don't get more people killed. Weather's turning. I think there's a storm coming.
You gotta be shitting me,
growled Major Lopez as the thick cloud above them suddenly burst with a crack of thunder. A strong upturn in the wind sent it lashing down onto the convoy at a near horizontal angle.
This better not be an omen,
he grumbled, flicking on the windshield wipers at their highest setting. Lucy stared out of the side of the truck, absent-mindedly fondling the newly attached captain insignia on the chest of her combat uniform. The general had been adamant. With so few personnel left, she was the nearest thing to Rangecroft in terms of knowledge of the beasts. The appointment was non-optional. Staring out into the night's torrential rain, she hugged her backpack and reflected on Rangecroft's notes. He'd identified a gland within the torso that he thought secreted the D4 enzyme, as he'd cautiously termed it. He'd also created a table recording the correlation between the diameter of the puncture mark and the speed of the victim's decay, along with countless sketches of body parts and different subspecies of beast. As the truck rumbled through the night, 18 hours into the long journey, Lucy couldn't sleep. They'd only stopped twice in daylight to resupply the vehicles using the fuel tanker. The route had been eerily quiet, and as they drove through the night, Lucy yearned for nothing more than the first streaks of dawn.
All stop. Repeat, all stop, came the general's voice on the radio.
Lucy's truck ground to a halt between the general's Humvee ahead and the troop carrier behind. Theirs was second in the line of around 20 vehicles carrying troops and recently conscripted civilians to the capital. They numbered around 200 in all and were well armed. The base had held munitions for 10 times that number. Lucy leaned forwards to get a view of the holdup, which was illuminated by the convoy's headlights. They'd made it to Camp Oscar, but there was no welcoming committee. The watchtower spotlights shone onto the camp approach asymmetrically, throwing the torrential rain into sharp relief. The falling bands of water tracked from side to side in waves battered by the wind. The radio crackled in once again.
All right, listen up, came Whitaker's voice. I want Humvees 2, 5, and 6 to follow me. We're going to explore the camp. All of the units are to hold their position until further notice. Be vigilant. We are in a state of maximum alert.
Roger, Humvee 1, chimed Major Lopez into the radio, clicking off as the other two requested units confirmed their attendance.
Wake up, folks. Everyone awake back there? It's go time.
Brooks, the woman next to Lucy in the back, groaned loudly, rubbing her eyes. Lucy shivered as she peered out of the window. The storm outside was dark and deeply uninviting. They pulled forwards again, slowly this time, following the general's vehicle as it passed the unmanned towers. The heavy metal gate lay in a crumpled heap on the wet tar. The general's Humvee rocked unevenly as it traversed the crushed gate, Lucy's truck following cautiously in its wake.
General, I don't like it,
said Lopez, radioing the lead truck as they advanced into the camp.
All units, be advised, said the general. If this expeditionary force is attacked or compromised, you are to proceed to the DC rendezvous immediately. I repeat, do not assist. Your duty will be to get to DC. We'll catch up with you if things go south. Stand by.
The four armored expeditionary vehicles pulled onto the forecourt one after another.
This isn't right,
said Lopez, gripping the wheel. He shuffled in his seat as they passed the first darkened building, continuing further into the campus.
The trucks are still here,
commented Lucy, eyeing up the dozens of troop carriers and other Humvees parked in loading formation. Their own Humvee's headlights illuminated the rippling green canvas shells of the idle, storm-battered vehicles. The road forked, and the general's vehicle hooked left towards a cluster of buildings. Lopez stayed close on him as they lost sight of the main convoy. The general's vehicle slowed, and the radio crackled in.
"Hold up, we need a closer look," came Whitaker's voice. "Major Lopez, check it out."
"Son of a beach," cursed Lopez, unfastening his belt. "Roger," he replied, tucking the portable radio into his breast pocket. "Coleman, take the wheel."
Yes, sir,"
replied the stumpy, balding officer next to him, pushing his glasses decisively back up the bridge of his nose.
"Young, Brooks, on me,"
shouted Lopez, throwing his armored door open and leaping out into the rain. Coleman quickly slid sideways across and filled the seat. Lucy swung her backpack over her shoulders and jumped out into the freezing downpour. The pelting rain drummed loudly on her metal helmet, while water seeped into her uniform. Brooks appeared at her shoulder, water droplets rolling off her dark cheeks. The two exchanged equally concerned looks before following the major. The three of them approached the darkened building, their rifle-mounted flashlights streaking across the ground as they moved. Lopez reached the window first and shone his light in.
"Oh, God."
Lucy and Brooks caught up, their lights further illuminating the hall. Body after body lay piled up in the middle of the room, with pools of blood congealing on the floor beneath.
"General," shouted Lopez into the radio. "They're all dead. There's been a massacre. They're piled up in the hall."
"What do you mean, piled up?"
responded Whitaker.
"I mean piled up, sir. The bodies have been dragged on top of each other. There's smears across the floor. The pile's gotta be at least 8 feet high."
"Blood smears?"
said Whitaker.
"You mean they've not deteriorated yet?"
"No, sir. The injuries look..."
Lopez trailed off as he realized what he was saying.
"Convoy, move out!"
cried the general into the radio.
"Convoy! Convoy, respond! Jesus Christ, Major, get back to your vehicle! Let's go!"
Whitaker's Humvee spun around while Lucy, Lopez, and Brooks threw themselves back into their vehicle. Coleman wasted no time swinging in behind trucks 5 and 6 as they raced after the general.
"Expedition, prepare to engage,"
came the general's voice on the radio as they tore back across the campus. Lucy looked through the windshield up ahead. The watchtower spotlights had gone out, leaving only the horizontal beams from the convoy's headlights. Stuttering patterns of gunfire flashed across the unfolding nightmare. Her eyes widened as the full scene came into view. Screams, rifle fire, and snarls blended cacophonously as a flood of beasts overran the convoy. The creatures swept through the vehicles, tearing off roofs and doors alike, and plucking out the humans like dumplings.
"Split up,"
ordered the general, prompting the expeditionary unit to scatter. For every creature that was shot down, 2 more took its place. They surged forward from the woodlands onto what remained of the static convoy. Lucy watched as one of the drivers tried desperately to maneuver through the carnage. There was no way out. The trucks at the front had been overturned, trapping the rest of the convoy. Uniformed bodies spilled across the roadside as beasts tossed them like rag dolls. As the expeditionary force hurtled towards the fray, the dwindling soldiers and the 6 trapped vehicles tried desperately to fight back, firing in all directions. Their numbers were plummeting.
"Expedition, all lights off! Switch to night vision!" cried the general. "Fire on sight!"
His voice was cut off by a series of crashes. Lucy watched in horror as the general's Humvee tumbled violently across their path. The vehicle barrel rolled twice before landing on its roof and skidding across the slippery tar. The general's neck was broken, pressing his wrinkled face into the windshield. His immaculate uniform lay creased beneath the young driver's twisted body. A pack of beasts descended upon the wreckage, smashing through the glass and metal to reap the dying soldiers.
"Coleman, this is insane! Retreat!"
screamed Lopez. Coleman leaned heavily into the steering column, swerving to avoid the wreckage and turning them 180 degrees until they were retracing their route back deeper inside the camp. Lucy desperately fumbled to get her night vision goggles on.
"Coleman, kill the lights!"
she cried, sensing what was coming.
"I can't, I don't have night vision on." Just do it, shouted Lucy. I'll direct you.
He killed the lights and continued to speed forward as Lucy stared ahead into the night. A dozen more beasts were quickly bounding towards them, cloaked by the darkness.
There are more of them coming up ahead, cried Lucy. We need to get inside.
Coleman threw the lights back on, the beams reflected off the distant beasts' retinas as they bounded into view.
Here,
yelled Lopez, pointing to the building on their left. Coleman immediately adjusted course, accelerating towards the door. Major Lopez leapt from the vehicle and ran into the building with Lucy hot on his heels, the two-way doors swinging wildly behind them.
Come on,
shouted Lopez as he pressed forwards, Lucy looking over her shoulder as she ran. Coleman and Brooks' sprinting figures flickered in the swinging door, but the pair were blindsided by the pack just yards from the entrance.
Oh my God,
cried Lucy, turning her head forwards again and chasing after Lopez with all her might. The doors clattered open as four of the beasts burst into the building, their powerful four-legged strides closing the gap between them and Lucy.
Grenade!
Shouted Lopez. Lucy barely reacted in time as the metal ball flew past her face and ricocheted off the floor with a clang, her arms pumping harder than ever as she counted down the seconds they had to run. The shockwave threw them both off of their feet and further down the corridor, the heat singeing Lucy's hair and face. For a moment, the whole world was blotted out by the ringing in her ears. Bit by bit, the dreadful soundscape returned as she clambered to her feet.
Move!
Shouted Lopez, training his handgun past Lucy's shoulder, his rifle long gone. She threw herself to the side as Lopez began to fire. The first beast fell to the ground, but another instantly took its place, prowling into the corridor through the large rupture they'd just blown into the wall. Lucy's rifle was out of ammo. She grabbed her handgun and fired as two more creatures entered through the breach, the smoke obscuring their positions. With a snarl, the creatures plunged through the smoke and bounded towards them. Lucy fired repeatedly, but it had no effect. The creatures were nimble and their movements erratic, dodging her aim as well as that of Lopez. Lucy threw down her gun and pulled off her backpack, ripping out the tub of white powder. With a scream, she tore off the lid and threw the contents on the ground, showering the floor in powder. The advancing beasts broke away suddenly, skidding across the floor and scrambling to halt their momentum as they recoiled from the swirling white powder.
Quickly!
Shouted Lucy, stepping forwards into the spilled powder and scooping it up, pressing it into her wet cheeks and hands. Lopez copied, staring at the creatures in amazement as they hesitated, snarling, considering their next move. Just then, a guttural, ground-shaking screech rang out, reverberating in every direction, making the skin on Lucy's bones quiver from her feet to her skull. The assembled beasts fell silent. Their ears pricked up and hairs raised as their heads flitted around for the source of the noise. With a growl, the three turned and bolted the way they'd come, disappearing out through the ruptured wall.
Let's go,
hissed Lopez as he began to back further away down the corridor. Lucy grabbed her handgun from the floor and followed after him. More guttural screeches resonated all around as they weaved through a series of deserted rooms. The whole ground shook beneath them at regular intervals as the unseen behemoth closed in.
Hey, don't shoot!
Cried a familiar voice from the darkness. Lopez froze, his gun trained at the doorway to the right. It was Jackson.
What the hell? How did you get in here?
Said Lopez in disbelief.
I ran, Major,
panted Jackson, meeting them halfway.
You're alive!
Spluttered Lucy incredulously, her eyes darting to the puncture mark on Jackson's wrist, which was now covered by her uniform. Plaster fell from the ceiling as the room shook thunderously once more, the vibrations much stronger now.
Jackson, do you know what the hell that thing is?
Urged Lopez, his squinting eye bulging larger than normal as he spun around in search of the source.
No, sir,
she replied as all three ducked down and rushed to the window, staying low and out of sight. Lucy peered out into the darkness towards the convoy. There were no gunshots illuminating the night anymore. Only the sparse beams from upended trucks provided light, but it was untargeted, giving her only glimpses.
Oh, my Lord,
said Jackson, looking out through her night vision goggles.
That can't be,
stuttered Lopez as he pulled them from her and looked himself. He wiped a veil of sweat off his upper lip and passed the goggles to Lucy, who took her turn. The giant beast was every bit as massive as its shattering footsteps suggested. Lucy took in its composition as best she could through the green goggles display. The pack of beasts was attacking the giant creature en masse and taking heavy punishment. The gigantic creature towered above them at least 6 stories tall. Standing on its hind legs, it used its upper 2 arms to swat away the beasts, while its middle arms trailed out towards either side of it, making sweeping lateral motions high above the ground, like it was slowly treading water. A vast scorpion-like tail arched up and over the creature's head, protruding outwards and projecting a mist of sorts that the goggles picked up. A group of beasts seemed to vanish as the spraying scorpion tail was pointed at them, erasing them from sight. As the tail turned away to a new target, the creature's lower arms swept over the area of the vanished beasts, where a plume of sorts formed between its paws and the ground.
"If we're gonna go, it has to be now,"
breathed Lopez, holding a hand out and gesturing for Lucy to return the goggles.
"Agreed," said Jackson. "One of our carriers is up ahead. I think it's truck 6. The squad's gone, but the truck might still work."
"We can't go the way the convoy went, surely," cautioned Lucy.
"Safest route is where that huge thing just came from. My bet is there's not much left behind it."
"Ready?" replied Lopez, squaring up to the emergency exit.
"Wait!"
cried Lucy, intervening just before Lopez's foot hit the escape bar.
"If we go out in the rain, we lose our protection."
She pointed to the chalky paste on their faces.
"Major, we need to eat the powder. I know that sounds insane, but you've got to trust me. It kept Jackson alive. It'll keep us alive."
Lopez looked at Jackson, who pulled back her sleeve and showed him the small white dome on her black skin.
"What the? You got bitten?"
gawped Lopez.
"If they bit me," replied Jackson, releasing her sleeve and shaking her arm out, "I wouldn't have an arm, sir. I got struck by a tentacle. Ain't no other way to say it."
"And the white powder stopped her from decaying," explained Lucy. "It saved her. Sir, we have to do this now."
Warily, Lopez scraped the powder from his cheek and placed it onto his tongue, wincing. He slammed a hand to his mouth as he gagged. Lucy did the same and swallowed hard. It stuck in her throat as Jackson forced open the fire escape and ran out into the downpour. Lucy and Lopez chased after Jackson's sprinting figure, struggling to keep pace with her as she sped through the darkness towards the truck, aided by the goggles. Lucy gasped as the Colossus came into view properly for the first time, standing over an upended Humvee, whose light illuminated much of the creature's massive figure. Its tail swished down and all around, spraying something faintly luminescent, which was just barely perceptible through the rain. It caused the attacking beasts to howl in agony. The creature picked up a beast and pulled it clean in two, while its lower arms continued to sweep around several yards above the ground. And now Lucy saw why. Great spirals of gen water twisted through the air like liquid tornadoes, leading up into the palms of the mighty beast as it continued to spray from its tail. The chemical onslaught liquefied anything it touched, which the giant harnessed in the same fell swoop. Beasts, humans, trees, plants, all were reduced with ruthless efficiency. Out of its back sprouted 2 giant wings, with an incongruous delicacy to them. The structures gently wafted back and forth as the creature fed. The wings had the spindly, fan-like shape of coral and the same dazzling myriad of colors, but moved with the flexibility of silk. Both wings ended in fine strands that tapered into invisibility.
"Young!"
hissed the major as Jackson brought the truck's engine to life. Lucy leapt into the truck. As they pulled away from the violence, she turned around to take in the great creature once more. It screamed again, but differently this time, as a group of beasts pierced its armor, tearing into the flesh of its calf. Gen water gushed out from the creature, which suddenly swayed and staggered sideways, off balance, before crashing to the ground. The beasts swarmed across it, pressing their advantage and tearing further into the mighty creature as it screeched in anguish. The creature's flailing arms smashed into the upended truck, blackening out the turmoil. From the distant fields, a fresh, piercing screech reverberated across the camp. The ground began to shake once again. Jackson hit the accelerator, wheeling the Humvee around on the spot and forcing it away at maximum acceleration. The thundering rain flooded the windshield as the wipers battled the deluge. Lucy turned back and peered out of the rear window as they fled the scene. Darkness had claimed the chaos, but the screeches continued to pierce the night. Facing forwards, she swallowed hard, again, forcing the remnants of the white powder down her throat. With the roar of the engine, the three fled into the darkness beyond.